This is exactly right.
On the 12th season of Tenfold More Wicked, we investigate a series of compelling mysteries from the city of Fall River, Massachusetts, where problems started generations before Lizzie Borden's murders made her a household name. Join me as we cover the misfortunes that have befallen this infamous town for more than 150 years, including the Great Fire of 1843. Season 12 premieres Monday, May 13th on Exactly Right. Follow Tenfold More Wicked on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We should look up synonyms for murder.
Okay.
For this podcast.
Okay. Oh, for the titles of the podcast?
No, no, just in general, so we don't say that word as much.
Oh,
killings,
right. Yeah.
Being taken out violently.
Assassinations.
Assassinations.
What are we going to name this episode, do you think?
It's number 9.
Yeah. 9.
Non-lives.
It's pretty much how this goes.
Spitballing. It doesn't get better after that.
Never.
Welcome, everybody, to My Favorite Murder.
Hi.
That's Georgia Hart Stark.
That's Karen Kilgariff.
I said it like I wasn't sure.
I know.
That's
Georgia?
Georgia,
right?
Georgia Hartshurst?
The worst is when someone misspells your name in a professional setting when they should absolutely spell your name correctly.
Yes.
Right? Karen Kilgariff with a complicated last name?
Yes. That's happened to me many times. Also, the worst is when people say your last name, and who you've known for years, and you realize that they always thought it was Kilgariff
or Kilgariff.
When you're like, well, I wish you knew me more.
I know. Hardstock. What the fuck? Hard and Stark are two very simple words, and yet somehow next to each other, people freak the fuck out.
People freak out. Although I do that thing where when I see somebody that I know for sure. Like if I ran into Dustin in a bar, I would, in my mind, I'd go, hi, Dustin. And when I would go to say it.
What if I'm wrong?
Yes.
Oh my God, I do that too. Except when I see someone that I for sure know like Dustin, I'll scream their name in front of them because I'm so excited that I know them. You know what I mean?
Like you want the credit?
Yeah. Because normally I'm like, I don't know who I know who you are.
Yeah.
But I don't think I do.
And I'm the kind of person that if I mess it up, and the person's like, don't worry about it. I won't stop talking about it.
Right. Or worrying about it.
Right.
Or letting it go. People call me Allie sometimes, and I'm like, it's okay. It's not okay.
It's okay.
But it's not.
Well, I mean, you should at least get one letter right.
Totally.
The first letter.
Totally.
Is all I ask.
I love that you have that word kill in your name, too.
Oh, me too. I find it intimidates people.
Yeah. We both have kind of like hardcore badass last names.
You have a like, yours is reminiscent of Charles Starkweather, the famous spree killer.
Sure.
That we're not talking about on this episode, but that we...
Okay, we know what I want to talk about up top before we start our favorite murders.
Before we start this bullshit?
Yeah. Is Someone Know Something, the podcast.
Yes.
I texted you the other day because I knew you were driving a long distance.
No, I was in New York. I was flying.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And I was like, you got to listen to this.
Yep. And I did.
All of them?
Well, there were only 3.
Right. There's a new one.
Oh, is there really? Good?
Yeah.
I'll listen to that on my drive home.
So this is, I didn't realize it when I started listening, but the entire season of this podcast is about one topic.
Yeah.
Should I read the description?
Sure. Because it's good.
It's fucking great. On June 12th, 1972, 5-year-old Adrian McNaughton wandered away from his family at a lake in Eastern Ontario and disappeared without a trace. In season 1 of Someone Knows Something, host David Ridgen, who grew up in the area, goes back and search for answers. And I had heard of this case and I'd never cared because I was like, he got eaten by bears, clearly.
Right.
But
right.
No.
And the more he goes into it, like, that's what I like about it, is you make up a thing. You hear facts from him and then you go, well, it's that guy or it's this
thing.
And then he keeps laying down hard facts that he goes out and looks at himself.
Yeah.
So there's recordings of him walking in the woods, testing the echo, talking to people who have never talked to anybody about it.
Right, who were they? It was one guy who was there that when he wandered away and police had never spoken to him about it.
Never spoken to him.
It's a pretty great show. I hope it stays that way.
So good. And I find sometimes I get a little bit impatient and this is sexist of me, but when the boys get a little wistful and poetic about their own thoughts and feelings about things,
mm-hmm.
where I'm just like, uh-huh.
That's the opposite of sexist, and I love it. Because that's always sexist against women fucking getting, being poetic about shit.
Good. Well, true. But I mean, like, I just have that thing where, yeah, and I just don't want anyone to be precious, really. But then I find it slightly more sickening if it's a man because of, I've bought into our cultural stereotypes and norms.
Right.
But when this guy does it, I buy it. I feel like he's being sincere. I don't think it's self-conscious or self-serving.
He seems so sincere that it's great. And it's clear that he's written out everything he's saying. It's more of a story he's telling, and the writing is good, and he tells the story in not a boring way like some of the other true crime podcasts do.
Right.
The music is a little dramatic at times, and the sound is a little dramatic.
But he's Canadian,
but it's
so they have a sincerity.
Oh, totally.
That they don't fear that here in America is almost not allowed.
Right.
And I like to indulge in that with a Canadian man every once in a while.
I love this podcast. It's our new The Simpsons, what we talk about at the beginning of every episode. Which, of course, means the people versus O.J. Simpsons.
Yeah.
Not O.J. Simpsons.
As many O.J. Simpsons as it takes to discuss it. Although the last episode, I have to say, the one about the jury was not so... I
loved it.
You did?
You didn't like it?
I mean, I loved knowing... I didn't know any of that
stuff. I didn't either. What a fucking bummer to be stuck in a hotel and you can't speak to anyone for months.
8 months. And then they didn't treat them well.
No.
No, it was... Well, it was good in that it was kind of riveting, but it was riveting in a, almost like in a... telenovela way.
Yeah.
It's ridiculously dramatic.
It kind of took us off the track that we were already on with all the episodes. It felt like we were moving forward, and this one didn't really feel like it was moving forward.
No, but the other thing I like, it felt very different.
Yeah.
But I also loved Marsha Clark in her new hair.
She looks hot, right?
She looks great in that hair. And also, she was so badass in this one. There was no, she didn't do any like rim. Tears on the rim of her eyes, or putting her head in her hands.
She told what's his name? Johnny Cochran to go to the playground or something, or what was it? Daycare.
Go to daycare because this is the smoker's lounge.
Yeah, and I was like, okay. If that really happened, which it probably didn't, I'm so happy about.
I feel like it could have.
It could have.
I mean, by that point, she's so pissed. So many things. Like, DNA evidence got completely ignored.
No. I mean, I feel like today that wouldn't happen.
No. No one knew what it was.
Yeah. What I'm loving more than anything is David Schwimmer's character, like, realizing his friend is a fucking murderer, and him apologizing to his wife that
his
friend was murdered. Yeah, he's defending a man who murdered her best friend.
Yeah.
What a bummer.
What a terrible... No, I mean,
I wonder if he had quit the trial, would...
Would he not died of cancer?
Would he not have died of cancer, and would have O.J. gotten off? Probably not.
Oh, you mean during it. Sorry.
Yes.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
I mean, no, that would have been bad news.
Exactly. So maybe that should have been his like non-statement that he's like, I can't support this anymore.
Yeah, except for that, then you're basically choosing how a person's life is going to go.
Yeah, but defending him, you're doing the same thing, or you're trying to,
I
at least.
Know, Georgia, it's so heavy.
There's a lot of decisions in life that one has to make. And it's not until they make a dramatic reenactment TV show 20 years later about it that you realize the decisions you should have made.
Yeah, I mean, please live your life like you're going to be reenacted in 30 years. And do you want someone of as high quality as Sarah Paulson to portray you?
Yeah, or then do you need to live your life like Sarah Paulson could be you.
A quiet nobility.
Right.
A single tear.
Or do you want John fucking Travolta being the most flamboyant, incredible character since Behind the Candelabra? And maybe even better.
I love it, though, but I don't mind it. Like,
I love it.
It doesn't bring me out of it. I never think of John Travolta. I believe him.
I do, too. I don't know if Robert Shapiro is like that. I have to assume he's somewhat like that in personal situations, and I love it.
I'd like to sing... a tune of praise for the very unsung Nathan Lane as F. Lee Bailey.
Nathan Lane as F. Lee Bailey is great. And yeah, Nathan Lane. Who knew he'd be in this? I got so excited.
Yeah, he's almost unrecognizable, not only because of his wig, but because I just believe it's that guy.
I do too. And F. Lee Bailey is such a noble character that it had to be played by someone excellent.
Yes.
And Nathan Lane is a beloved actor, perfect for that role.
Right. Oh, guys. We did it. If you're not watching it, we've ruined it.
If you're not watching it, you've ruined yourself. You've ruined it for yourself.
There's nothing more we can ruin in your life. Mm-mm. How's it going? Everything else all right?
Oh, yeah. Everything's good. Not murdered yet. I'm fucking... The Facebook group is, like, near and dear to my heart at this point.
The Facebook group is making me regret leaving Facebook.
If you want to sign up a fake account, fake name, I will not out you. But it is such a pleasing place to go when I have insomnia and just talk to... Like, everyone is so fucking cool. I comment and I post things and I read everyone's posts and it's just like really fun. And the discussions we get into and the comments people make, everyone's nice. There hasn't been anything racist or mean yet. I haven't had to kick one person out, which is like shocking for Facebook.
I thought we were really big in the racist community. Damn it.
Well, we are. They just keep it quiet.
They behave appropriately.
Yeah. And there's 50, this is our ninth episode, and there's already 1,500 people in the Facebook group.
Fuck yeah, you guys. Thank you.
It turns out everyone needed a place to talk about murder.
Well, it is fascinating. Yeah. It truly is. Somebody at work today started talking about H.H. Holmes. And
yeah.
Literally in my head, I had to say, like, a teacher, don't say anything, Karen. Let her tell her story.
Don't be a know-it-all.
I had to press my lips together. Because all I want to do is be like, just jump all
over. Don't
you
want to be like, murder is mine? Yes. Like, I'm the one who talks. You don't get to talk about murder. I talk about murder.
I think, though, that's kind of a good lesson just in general. Because I think I've been that way about more than murder of my life.
It's
such
a hard
thing not to be like. But it's like, if someone brings it up themselves, let them tell the story.
Let them have it. Murder doesn't belong to you, or whatever it is doesn't belong. I'm not telling you. I'm telling myself because this is. I totally agree.
Oh, that wasn't to me. Okay.
No, that was to me in any conversation. Oh, not. Oh yeah. Well, did you know that?
Yes.
You know,
it's
like,
so hard.
And then when you're like, oh well, and you like bring up something that compares to it, you just sound like an asshole unless you're sincerely wanting to bring up another murder. You instead of saying like, well, this is how much I know about it, which I do all the time.
Yes. This podcast could also go into the areas of etiquette, general etiquette.
Well, I do it in this podcast too, of not wanting to speak over you like I just did.
No. Oh, but it's fine with me.
Okay.
Here,
well,
I don't want you.
Well, not wanting to speak over you, also not wanting to be like, yeah, no, I know that murder you're about to talk about.
But it delights me when you do that. I think it's hilarious.
There was one you had that I kept trying to add to and kept telling myself just shut the fuck up in my head because it was so obnoxious.
But it's hard. For me, it's hard when you read a thing by yourself and you're like, there is a man in Chicago during the World's Fair that basically built a murder hotel. And I'm just finding out now. And I read it with what I imagine other people read, like books when they go to college. I read it with the same enthusiasm and kind of like absorption. So then when if somebody else starts talking about it, I want them to know that I know, like I want them
to know that you're cool.
I guess. Yeah. And like that. I want to like scream and grab each other's shoulders. I want that feeling with people I don't know that
well. I do too. And I want them to know that I'm on the level with them and we can have this conversation instead of like, and also like I'm embarrassed. Like, don't keep telling, you're going to keep telling me about it. And then you're going to find out that I have a true crime podcast. And you're like, why didn't you say anything that you knew about this? It's actually really the book, The Devil in the White City.
Yes. That's what we were talking about.
Did you read that? That's it.
I had to wait till she was done. And then kind of like take a beat. I was really using it as like an exercise.
Yeah.
And then someone goes, I think they're making a movie. I think there was a book. And then I was like, don't say it the second the word's out of their mouth. And then I was like, that's right. It's called Devil in the White City.
Yeah. But then if I were the girl who brought it up, I'd be like, wait, so this whole time you've been letting me mansplain something to you and you knew about it.
But also sometimes mansplaining is just talking. Sometimes people get to talk to us knowing something and we can accept that.
Yeah. And we don't have to know. We don't have to tell them. But I know.
Yes.
You don't have to. I know everything.
Yeah. We can be not in the position of victim or somebody that's being oppressed. You can assume that person doesn't have the power to oppress you and you're just being polite.
Yeah.
And letting them be a know-it-all is an okay thing to do.
But then they're never going to get to know you because you didn't tell them that you know shit.
That's very true. But I'm also, this is a work situation where I can't. I have to let my personality out bit by bit because it's a lot.
You can't scream in someone's face. Yes, yeah. I love murder.
As my mom used to say, you're too much. And she meant it very literally.
Yeah. Well, we're a lot. And that's why we have a true crime podcast.
We're a lot.
A murder podcast.
We could, this podcast could literally go for 4 hours.
Yeah, that's why we're friends, is because the first time we actually hung out on our own, we had a 5-hour lunch.
Yeah, we did.
Just talking.
And the whole time I kept thinking, am I the only one that wants to stay here? Right. Is she trapped?
Right.
But it was clear that we were both voluntarily eating lunch for 5 hours.
Yeah, and the conversation flowed. It wasn't one-sided.
That's right.
I think. Do you, speaking of
we
one-sided.
We still have our doubts.
We are good. We are great. Anxiety is real. Speaking of one-sided and talking about a thing.
Yes.
Do you want to do your favorite murder? I think you're first.
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah. So you picked this. You told me this week's theme in a way that I already knew that you knew what you were doing.
Yes. reverse engineered this week's theme because I had to do this story because I'll say his first name and last initial because one of our listeners DM'd us, which I adore. He DM'd us like so as not to embarrass, I think. But he was like, how could you have talked about The Exorcist and not talked about this? And sent me a link and all this stuff. And I wrote back in all caps, holy shit, how did I miss this? So that's where mine started. So then when I talked to Georgia, I was like, can this week's be like hiding in plain sight or murders that like they were right there the whole time?
Okay.
Kind of thing. Because in The Exorcist, one of the biggest stories, and I swear, I looked at over 5 websites about my Exorcist cursed movie set which was my thing last week, if you didn't hear it. But Brian B., uh-huh. Our listener sent us his DM because there was a guy in The Exorcist, and he was the guy that played the radiologist. Something's wrong with my mouth. This
words.
Week. Radiologist assistant in the scene we talked about that I said was so creepy, where she was in that crazy machine getting like the MRI. The guy that plays the assistant in that scene turned out to be a serial killer.
No.
Yes.
Like a serial killer.
A legit 6 victim, straight up New York in the 70s serial killer.
That just reminded me of something when I gasped, is that there is a thread on the Facebook group that every time I say, holy shit, you have to take a shot. Or when I say, no. Or when I gasp, like there's certain things. And then when you sing a word, like a thing, like, yes, it is. You have to take a shot. It's pretty hilarious.
It's very lighthearted.
It's not in a mean way at all.
Oh, no. Yeah. Please.
Okay.
But now I don't want to be self-conscious about it. And do it all the time. Because I love when people are so drunk, they fall off their own couch. All right. So Brian B. sent us this very tasteful DM about a huge thing I missed. And I'm so bummed.
Please don't beat yourself up.
I won't entirely, but talk about like wanting to be an expert and dropping the ball.
Well, I blame the first 5 websites that came up that didn't mention this.
They didn't.
So nobody knew.
But yeah, maybe it is like specialized knowledge or something. Maybe I just have to go to better websites first. Or
you have to, like, I've been Googling weird shit, like the weird
stuff.
Not just like so-and-so murder. I've been Googling like deep down weird shit.
Have you gone dark web?
I wish I could. I don't know how to go dark web, but
don't
I really
do it.
I don't want
try.
To.
I'm sure Dustin knows. Let's not.
Oh, I'm sure Dustin knows dark web. Look at how excited he looks. He's doing the thing when we talk about something. He's like, I know about this. He's doing it.
That kind of a wait. Do you actually like murder stuff like this, Dustin?
I'm not. I think I'm more affected by it than you are.
Oh.
Like, I'm not enthusiastic about it. It really makes my skin crawl.
Okay. So you don't get stoked and excited. You wouldn't be at a party with us and stick around our conversation.
You'd walk away, probably.
I'd have nothing probably.
Oh my God, I never even thought to ask that.
What a beautiful thing that you still come here and record this.
Thanks,
with us.
Thanks, Dustin, and gave us a podcast to begin with.
It turns out those headphones, he's just blasting Radiohead the whole time. He has no idea what we're saying.
Radiohead, I love it.
There's something about the sound of an old-timey cash register that really takes me back.
I know. It sounds like someone is about to hand me an ice cream cone, but it also sounds like we just sold some merch.
That's right. And if you're a Shopify user like us, you know that this sound means you just made a sale.
Shopify has helped millions of businesses sell their products online, but did you know they also offer the same support for brick and mortar stores?
From accepting payments to managing inventory, they have everything you need to sell in person. So give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify.
Shopify POS tracks sales across all your locations. That way, you'll always know what you have in stock and where.
They also provide reliable tech that fits your unique retail needs, like turning a tablet into a credit card reader.
And if you're looking to reach new customers, check out Shopify's marketing tools. They're easy to use, and they integrate with all social media platforms.
With Shopify, we have a powerful partner for managing our sales. And if you're a business owner, you can too.
Do retail right with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period today at shopify.com/murder. And here's the important note, that promo code is all lowercase.
So go to shopify.com/murder and take your retail business to the next level.
That's shopify.com/murder. Again, don't forget, the code is all lowercase.
Goodbye.
Georgia, have you ever been blown away by the most simple dish at a restaurant, like perfectly scrambled eggs?
Oh my God, yes, Karen. And then all I want to do is make that dish at home and eat it every day.
Well, you probably could, as long as you have the chef's secret ingredient, Made In cookware.
Made In was created to bring restaurant quality performance kitchenware to home chefs around the world.
For years, they've built their business by supplying restaurants and top chefs with high-end cookware. Some of Tom Colicchio's most treasured dishes at his restaurant Kraft are made in Made In.
Whether you're cooking for professional critics or just the critics you live with, your meals will benefit from the quality of Made In products.
Like their carbon steel cookware, it combines the best of both cast iron and stainless steel clad, so it's rugged enough for grills or an open flame. It's the MVP of summer cookouts and cook-ins. What I really love about Made In cookware is that it actually makes something like having a Memorial Day barbecue much more convenient, because you can keep everything on the grill. If you need to throw, say, a pan of garlic up on the top while you're grilling your steaks on the bottom, it's strong enough, durable enough to do that.
If you want to take your cooking to the next level, remember what so many great dishes have in common. They're all Made In, Made In.
Save up to 25% this Memorial Day from May 18th through May 27th when you visit madeincookware.com.
That's M-A-D-E-I-N cookware.com. Goodbye.
Okay, so here's the research part, and I hope I do this justice, but I'm not going to, because I basically did only part of my homework. But essentially, this is it in a nutshell.
I'm excited.
The guy's name was Paul Bateson, and he was, in real life, a 38-year-old X-ray tech at NYU Med Center, where they shot that scene. Oh, it's called an arteriogram, is what she was getting in that scene, which is like a crazy machine that, like, not a centrifuge, but like the thing that it spins you in all those different directions. Yeah. Very upsetting and weird noises. So I guess when they went to like location scout, he was there. They cast him because he already worked there and knew how to work the machine.
Legit already.
Right. And what I love is the link that Brian B. sent us, the picture that comes up with this article. He looks so creepy. He looks like any dude in the 70s, like kind of forward. His hair is going forward, kind of sandy blonde, goatee. But his eyes are drooping like they're melting.
So like you were like, oh, what a great casting job that they hired this actor. And it's like, nope, this is what he looks like. And that's why they hired him from this creepy movie.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, that's a little woo-woo to think that like, his secret life was the reason that scene was so creepy. I actually don't. Oh, this was before. So he went. These murders happened later in the 70s. So I think he did that first.
Okay.
Oh no, sorry. The murder started in 1973. So that was.
So he was like on camera having had murdered someone.
I think so. I would have to look up. The movie came out in 73 and was. I'm the one that did this.
No, you're good. Just keep, pretend week, like you know what you're talking.
I'm pretty sure I know what I'm talking about.
Just own it.
Yeah, I think he murdered.
He must have murdered before.
Directly. I think he was doing it during and then ended up getting caught after, because it was over a period of time. So essentially what happened is so these people started going missing, or there was like murder scenes. So the first one was a man named Ronald Cabo. He lived in the West Village, and he was stabbed to death on his sofa, and then his apartment was set on fire. Holy he was 29 shit. Years old.
Holy shit. Someone take a shot.
Holy shit, right? Because he's so young.
Yeah.
And then 4 days later, so they just think that's standard murder in New York City
in
1973. 4 days later, a man named Donald McNiven, who was 40 years old, and a guy named John P.W. Beardsley, age 53, were both found in Donald's apartment on Varick Street. They both lived in the building, but they were in Donald's apartment. Mm-hmm. And again, the apartment had been set on fire. And Beardsley was actually on the social register in New York and Philadelphia. So he was like some fancy, he had been a Harvard grad.
Wow.
So, and they had no idea. They just looked another bad stabbing murder. I think Beardsley was the one stabbed and McNiven was bludgeoned.
Did they, and it was 4 days later?
4 days later.
Did they connect the two immediately, I wonder?
No, not at all.
How do you not connect to stabbing and fires?
Because, well, maybe they might have like noted it, but in the 70s in New York City, I think there's several murders a day.
And they're not sharing precinct to precinct murders.
Right. 2 weeks later, the body of Robin Barrero was found floating in the Hudson River. He had been missing for 5 weeks.
Oh, my goodness.
He was still in a leather jacket. He was really decomposed, but he had a leather jacket on. And then 9 days after that, two gay men were murdered. I think they were roommates. And their dog, their pet poodle.
No.
Yes. And from the stuff that was in the apartment at that murder is when they started putting together. These are all people who have something to do with the leather community.
Okay, I was going to say that would make sense.
Yeah, the leather jacket started. And in that first guy, Ronald Cabo, the picture that they have up of him, he's really young and he's wearing a leather jacket. So I'm sure at the time it was like, oh, that's just fashion choice, whatever.
Yeah.
But then person after person, they're probably finding different things. And so by the end, they got one of the jackets, they got the tag and they found it was belonged to a store in the West Village that was completely an S&M store.
Yeah.
S&M clothing and supplies.
So it was like a leather gay boys.
Yes.
Killing.
And so, that's when they start to realize, oh, this is gay. But once again, it's just like the freeway murders in LA. It's a gay community thing or any disenfranchised when it's prostitutes.
Totally.
The cops are like,
who cares?
No one cares. And we're not going to get pressure from City Hall.
I mean, I'm sure they could, if it's someone in the community and everyone who's being killed is in that community, that you talk to the rest of the people in that community and they're like, this guy's creepy and has gone home with all of these men.
Right.
It's pretty simple. No, it's not. I mean, I'm sure it's not that simple, but it
it's
seems
not that
like
simple, but it's the thing of what people decide to value.
Right.
So if the people in power don't value your life or your what you do in the community, if they actually think you're gross or bad or judge you morally, then they won't try to help you or they won't feel any, you know, burning desire to find your killer.
Well, they say, I mean, this is what they say, and I've totally. So they say you're living a high-risk lifestyle already.
Yes.
Are you living a high-risk lifestyle? Well, then, are you a prostitute? Are you a drug addict? Are you living, you know, in a gay community where you're around a lot of strange men a lot?
Yeah.
That's a high-risk lifestyle, and they care less about you.
Yeah.
Because they think you kind living a high-risk lifestyle means you kind of deserved it.
It's you brought it on yourself.
I'm not saying I think that. But
of course not.
Right.
But it's an excuse, I'm sure, when cops see, you know, it's New York City in the 70s, jeez, they saw probably 20 murders a day.
Yeah.
So you're trying to somehow prioritize these things or you can't put your heart and soul into every single thing that comes across your desk.
Totally.
But I'm sure it got very easy to start marginalizing the deaths of these people or to not put things, you know, put things together.
Yeah.
So anyway, they start. Body parts start washing up on the shore of the Hudson River. So there's like apparently there's a gay cruising spot by the Hudson River piers. Mm-hmm. And that's where different body parts wrapped in garbage bags start showing up. And so they, putting all this together, they started calling the whole case the fag in the bag killer.
Oh, wow.
And so you can tell by that, you know, obviously there's not a lot of sensitivity back then anyway, but that's basically their attitude about all the stuff that's going on.
Wow.
So then a drag performer, they said drag performer in this article, but let's call her a drag queen. I bet she was a queen.
Yeah.
And her name was Toni Lee, and she was strangled in her apartment in the West Village. And the Village Voice wrote a big article about it because she was famous. Yeah. A lot of people knew her. And that's when they started to really put together. They knew for a fact that after hours and after, like, the normal bars, she would go to leather bars.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when they, you know, were like, oh, we think we're onto something with this, like, leather theory.
Yeah.
And then a man named Addison Verrill, who was 36, and he was the film critic for Variety magazine. He was found stabbed and bludgeoned with a cast iron skillet in his apartment.
And it's so weird that all of them are in their own apartments, meaning that this person was allowed to come in.
Yes, that's right.
That's what scares me the most. Is like, yeah, I know this person. I see him around my scene.
Yeah, it's pickup stuff. Yeah. It's like they're going to sex bars or going to leather bars. Or just, you know, the 70s. This is like the Looking for Mr. Good Bar.
Totally.
Era, where everybody was like, it was post hippie shit where people are like, yeah, I'm sexually liberated.
It was pre-AIDS epidemic.
Yes. Yeah. Where so. It was kind of like, yeah, everybody wants to have sex. Let's do this thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of trust. And especially with, they were in this thing I was reading about is like the leather community. There's lots of, you know, like leather daddies are like really big, muscly men.
Yeah.
So they don't think anyone's going to hurt them.
Right.
They're, you know, in charge. It's very overblown presentational masculinity.
It's less of a risk than a woman going home with a man because a man can defend himself supposedly against another man.
Yeah. Exactly. Think. And also they're like, that's part of the play, which I'm sure is the other thing. The cops were like, you know, this is a little something that got out of hand type of thing. Because it's what you're into anyway.
Right.
Blame.
Right.
So this journalist named Arthur Bell wrote up this big article after Addison Verrill, after the story came out that he was stabbed, because the whole story about Addison Verrill was whitewashed. They didn't talk about him being gay. It was very like a terrible murder, but they made it sound like a passing thing.
Random murder.
And Arthur Bell was like, there is a serious serial killer in our community, and we have to start giving a shit. And if nobody's going to give a shit about somebody that's famous, like, you know, like this is our chance or whatever. So he wrote a big, huge article for the Village Voice about, you know, that people needed to start, like real police work needed to start going into this because people were very afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got a phone call.
No.
Arthur Bell, this journalist, he gets a phone call from a man who tells him, I'm the guy that killed Addison Verrill. And we were together. I met him at a bar. We went back to his apartment. And while we were, after we had sex, I had an epiphany and I realized this was not a reciprocal relationship. He didn't love me. He didn't want to be my boyfriend. He didn't want to get married. And I wasn't getting anything I wanted, and that's why I killed him. And he tells him a bunch of specifics, including that there was Crisco all over the scene of the crime, which was a very common lubricant that people used back then.
Really?
But that had not been released to the press in any way.
Right.
And so Arthur Bell calls the cops and says, I just got this phone call that was crazy. I figured I should tell you. And he starts telling them these details that no one else knows besides the cops. And the cops know this is the real guy.
Holy crap.
So he talked to the real killer, which is insane. So then Arthur gets a call from a guy named Richard Ryan, who said he also knew who the killer was because he had met him and talked to him. And this guy had basically told him, I think he said he met him in AA or something. And he basically had been trying to get sober and had admitted to him that like he had killed Addison Verrill.
Wow.
And so,
but that's the only one he admitted to killing.
That's the only, yes.
Okay.
So Arthur Bell takes that information, goes to the cops, gives them the name, and that's when they go and find Paul Bateson. And after they arrested Bateson, he was in Rikers, and apparently he was bragging to everybody in there that he not only killed Addison Verrill, but he was killing, quote, like, a bunch of gay guys just for fun because he was bored.
Holy shit.
And so then...
Just for fun because he was bored.
Yeah. He's just trying to impress people.
Go
but obviously
bowling,
he was,
dude.
He was cutting people up, wrapping their parts in bags and dumping them in the river.
My God.
So they think they think he's responsible for way more murders. But he would only he pled guilty to the Addison Verrill murder, got 20 years, and he got out in 2004.
20 years from just
for stabbing, bludgeoning, murder.
Just because you got sad that someone didn't love you, dude.
Who? Oh, you mean the murderer?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, yeah, you got bummed that Addison didn't love you.
Well, but you know this. I mean, he's probably psychotic or, you know.
Yeah, but it's so weird. Like, what's the word I'm looking of? It's not like they got in a fight. He just killed him. And he only gets 20 years.
Yeah.
That bothers me so much.
Well, he's crazy. He clearly can't, you know.
I know.
What's he going to have another relationship? And how's he going to deal with that?
I hate that there are people like that out there.
Yeah, there's lots of them.
I don't.
So, but here's the interesting thing. So William Friedkin hears about this, finds out that an extra in his movie was a serial killer, goes to Rikers and starts interviewing him, and then decides, and in the meantime, somebody else, I don't have the author's name, wrote a book called Cruising, which was about a serial killer in the 70s leather scene in New York City. And so Friedkin goes and talks to Paul Bateson and then decides he's going to direct the movie.
No way.
And so there's a movie called Cruising starring Al Pacino about a cop that's going undercover in the New York City leather scene to find a serial killer.
Did you watch it?
I have not seen it.
I wonder if it's easy to find or if it's one of those.
I think it is. It's kind of infamous because it's very homophobic. It's very bad.
Yeah.
Like, it basically says all these people are deviants without morals and would kill you and kill anybody. And there's a lot of bad stuff in it. And when the gay community found out that they were shooting this movie in New York City, it basically galvanized the gay rights movement, and they would go down and like protest the shooting while they were filming.
Yeah.
So they would go down with whistles, and they were holding up like mirrors and making light go into the scenes or whatever.
That's great.
But they ended up shooting it anyway. They got it done. And when it came out, everyone was like, this is the worst, you know, like up until that point, most gay men in film were like, oh, you're the kooky butler that has no real life or personality.
And they don't actually say you're gay. They just imply it.
You're just a joke.
Right.
You're just a joke.
Right.
And now you're not just, now you're, when you're not a joke, you're a murderer.
And a murder victim who kind of deserves it.
You're a victim. Exactly. And everything about your life lacks all morals, and you're basically... Yeah,
how much more real would that whole story be if the person, the murderer, it had nothing to do with the fact that he was gay? He's just a fucking psychopathic murderer.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, it's just the whole thing is super awful. There's a great movie called The Celluloid Closet, and it's a documentary about, you know, all like gay people in Hollywood and the treatment of them and basically the way they've been presented and seen.
That
it's
sounds
pretty
cool.
Fascinating. And they talk about Cruising. It's really good. I think that's it. I had something else, but
I'm sorry. My cats are attacking each other next to you. And that's amazing.
That's it.
So tell me his name again. I want to go.
Paul Bateson is his name.
I want to go back and see that scene where there's a fucking real life serial killer.
I know. It's really good. It's very, very creepy scene. Now, I should have watched. I just didn't have time to watch Cruising, but I also know it's incredibly depressing.
There's no point in you watching that.
And I also read like reviews of it, and apparently it's not very cohesive, and it was initially rated X. So they had to pull out all these scenes because there's all this like, you know, kind of intense leather scene shit. And they wouldn't, the MPAA or whatever they're called, would not let William Friedkin. So basically, when he had to edit it, it came out way shorter and almost nonsensical.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Man, people always talk about wanting to go back in time, which I totally fucking do. But the 70s, even the 70s, the 80s, the 90s were so racist and homophobic and fucking sexist. Would you really want to go back?
I mean, that's the thing. It's just this, it's the more we talk about stuff like this, it just becomes this like humanist thing to me where it's just like people have to, I mean, it's separate from mentally ill people who just like have to murder or whatever. But it's a thing of like, we have to look at each other as human beings.
Yeah.
It's crazy that, you know what I mean? We always want to go, oh, those people, they get what they deserve. Or it's like, are you fucking crazy?
Yeah.
But if something happens to you, you don't deserve it.
Yeah. Someone could, you and I could be in a category that someone, a lot of people out there would say that about for whatever reason, because we're women, because we live in Los Angeles, because, you know, whatever the reasons.
Yeah.
So people could say that about you. So why would you say that about other people?
Right. It's just, I don't, it's just lame. It's just, I don't know. I don't know.
It's,
at the end of all these stories, I'm always like,
it's lame.
Oh, I'm sorry I brought it up.
Sorry I brought it up.
It's a rough one.
It's called My Favorite Murder. I'm sorry I brought it up.
I'm sorry I brought it up.
I'm not.
Yeah, there's something fascinating to the idea that there's just like a person in a horror movie that's also living, is walking the walk.
I wonder if he in his, I wonder if he in his twisted brain was like laughing at the irony of it too.
I know, I wonder. He's apparently a very bad alcoholic too. So he claims so he didn't remember a lot.
He's still
of the
alive
murders.
And he's out.
Yeah, oh yeah. I think he's died since. He got out in 2004. He was living in upstate New York.
What did he do after? Just chill and make breakfast? Did he make breakfast for himself every day?
Yeah, he just, you know what? He went down to the community center and he...
That's so crazy.
He loved to help with the spaghetti dinner every month.
Isn't it crazy that you only have to go door to door and let your community know if you're a pedophile, but not if you're a convicted murderer?
Serial killer.
A convicted serial murderer.
He wasn't convicted for all of them, though. So yeah, just a killer. Just a killer.
So you don't have to let them know that unless you fondle children.
Right.
I want to know if someone next door to me is... No, I don't. Do I? No.
You know, there's pros and cons.
There is pros and cons.
It'd be hard to sleep.
You know, it'd be better as if sentencing were a little more...
Just a little harsher for the people who will take you out.
It's not that harsh isn't the word. Fitting is the word.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, Jesus.
That's right.
If you're like me, you're always looking for a story to dive into. Whether it's a family drama or a mystery to solve, the key to getting hooked is the details. I need rich visuals and intricate storylines, and June's Journey has that and more. June's Journey is a mobile mystery game that follows June Parker, a daring young woman, on a quest to uncover the truth about her sister's murder. This is your chance to test your detective skills because you'll play the game as June herself. Explore beautifully designed scenes from the 1920s, like lavish estates and gardens, and don't forget to keep an eye out for hidden clues. There are twists, turns, and catchy tunes, all leading you deeper into the thrilling storyline. And if you play well enough, you could make it to the Detective Club. There, you'll chat with other players and compete with or against them. June needs your help, but watch out, you never know which character might be a villain. Shocking family secrets will be revealed, but will you crack the case? Find out as you escape this world and dive into June's world of mystery, murder, and romance. It's all just one tap away. Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. That's June's Journey. Download the game for free on iOS and Android. Goodbye. Hey, Karen, you know that feeling when you're stressed out and your heart starts to pound and your mind is racing?
I do. I know it well.
Well, while there's no cure for stress, therapy can help shape your response to it. And since May is Mental Health Awareness Month, there's no better time to try Talkspace.
When you sign up for Talkspace, you'll receive a personalized match with a therapist or psychologist, typically within 48 hours.
Forbes rates Talkspace as the number one online therapy platform, plus their licensed professionals are in network with almost all major insurance companies.
Once you meet your therapy goals, or if you want to cancel for any reason, Talkspace will provide you with a prorated refund for unused time. I feel like these days people understand the importance of therapy, but the difficult part is just taking that first step. It took me months to make my first therapy appointment. I was so scared. I had a lot of ideas in my head about it. And that's why I think Talkspace is such a good idea, because making it so approachable will just get you there sooner. Then you can actually get in there, figure out what you need, talk to an actual professional, and
be on your way to solving some stuff that you might want to solve.
To celebrate Mental Health Awareness Month and the power of talking it out in therapy, Talkspace is offering our listeners $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80.
Go to Talkspace.com/MFM and use promo code SPACE80.
To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com/MFM and enter promo code SPACE80 and get $80 off your first month and show your support for our show.
That's Talkspace.com/MFM. Enter promo code SPACE80.
Goodbye.
Hey, what's your murder joke?
Hey, okay, so hiding in plain sight, when you said that to me, I was like, oh, okay. I didn't really get it. No, I was excited about it because I was like, but I was like, so you mean like serial killers who have day jobs? Like, I didn't really understand it. So I was like,
but what yeah, that's kind of what I meant.
Okay, yeah. And you said yes. So I was like, what does that mean to me, hiding in plain sight? And to me, that meant being, and I'm fascinated by this and how disgusting it is, you're hiding in plain sight is being a child who kills someone.
Oh, good one.
Because that's plain sight is being a child.
That's
and this,
right.
This one is kind of, so I have two similar but very different child murderers that I've always thought about because they're so fucked up. And the first one is, the murderer is Josh Phillips.
Okay.
And he killed Maddie Clifton. So, do you know this one? No. Yeah. This one is a kind of well-known one, but it's interesting because recently some new information came out about it. So basically, this kid, Josh Phillips, was born in 1984. He's from Jacksonville, Florida. And in July 1999, he was convicted of murdering his 8-year-old neighbor, Maddie Clifton. He murdered her in November 98. He was 14 years old, and she was 9 years old. And what happened was, Maddie disappeared, and everyone, the whole community, started looking for her and couldn't find her. And then the search ended a week after the disappearance when Josh Phillips' mother went to clean up Josh's room and thought his waterbed was leaking.
Aww.
Which, A, don't get your kid a waterbed. B, it's not leaking.
You're not like a bachelor.
Yeah, what is that? Yeah, way to give your kid fucking back problems and send them to jail at the same time. Because what's more comfortable, the waterbed or the jail mattress? I don't know.
It's always the mother's fault.
It's Melissa, you needed to get this together. Upon further examination, she discovered that it was Maddie's body hidden inside, hidden like underneath the bed. And she, and fucking kudos to her, ran outside. Across the street, there was a police and was like, hey, this kid, you know, like some parents, I don't know if they would do that immediately or
no.
They would wait until he came home and talk. I'm like, what the fuck? And then call the police. She was like, get the fuck, you know, freaked
yes.
out.
Oh, that is amazing.
So Josh was arrested at school that day and he was held in maximum security. So here's what's so fucked up about it. He was, as a 14-year-old, he was tried as an adult and convicted to and sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. Like adult killers who kill more people in a more fucked up way and sexually assault them are not tried, are not convicted, or are not given such a harsh sentence.
Right.
So according to Josh, what happened was that Maddie came next door to play with him. And despite the fact that Josh wasn't allowed to have people over when his parents weren't home, he let her in anyways. The two were playing, according to him, the two were playing baseball outside. Maddie threw the ball, or Josh threw the ball, and it struck Maddie in the eye, causing her to start bleeding. And she started to scream, and Josh freaks out because his father is abusive and has a temper. And if he finds out that Maddie's there, the fact that she's screaming and got hurt at his house, he's going to be in a shit ton of trouble, including being abused. So he takes her to his room. I don't know if I should even like go into the details because I know people who are listening have children and I don't want to.
Well, if you have children and you are listening to a murder podcast, but you're going to get sensitive.
Yeah.
Then I would go forward 1 minute and 30 seconds.
Thank you. Basically, she died from stabbing and strangulation and clubbing with a baseball bat. Overkill. Took her pants off, but she wasn't molested, which is odd. Also, I was reading something on Reddit that said that she didn't have any. He said he dragged her inside the house, but there wasn't any dirt or sticks or anything on her body, on her clothes, which would indicate that that had happened. So we don't really know for sure. And that's a really, that's, I mean, he tries to get off easy by saying he hit her in the head, but then he goes on to over and tells how he killed her. So it's not like he was, if he was lying about one of them, why wouldn't he lie about both of them?
Yes.
So he's never going to be free. She was nude from the waist down, but it didn't seem. And so the murder appears to have been motivated by his fear of his abusive father. Ugh, it's just so fucked up.
Do they know that's true? Or would that be another thing he could have been making up?
Yeah, we don't know that either. Or even that maybe the because I watched a couple episodes of you know, true crime shows where the parents get interviewed. And maybe that was something they made up even to say, like, oh, no, the father was abusive and he was scared of him. Like, let's give him an out. Yes. So we don't know if that was true or not.
Well, the thing, I think you're right. Him, especially the stabbing part.
Yeah.
The stabbing is such a furious and personal thing.
He also choked her for 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
That is a long, and it's very hard to choke someone to death. I think we all, if you're into true crime, you know this. It takes a lot longer and a lot more force than you.
And that's when you're an adult.
That's when you're an adult. Yeah. But he's also, she's also 8 or 9, so she's probably a little more fragile. She's, I mean, the thing that fucks me up about this is that she's this little tomboy girl, and she reminds me of me as a kid who wanted to hang out with the older boys and play with them and be one of the guys. There's a video, there's a home video he made that the boy made of this little girl, Maddie, and her sister playing with their new puppy. So, like, she trusted this kid next door. She wanted to come over and was bugging him to play with her. And as a 14-year-old...
Did he have, like, a history of anything?
Not
mental
stuff. The dad died in a car accident eventually. Okay, so in 2012, recently, the Supreme Court ruled that automatic life without parole sentences for juveniles is unconstitutional. And that ruling entitles Phillips to a resentencing hearing. Also, he's super hot now. Whatever. That's just beside the point.
But let's just put it out there.
Let's just let everyone know that.
Let's just get those people on Tinder aware.
Yeah. So, and there's not a ton of conversation about this murder, like on Reddit or anything like that. So I just thought it was interesting.
I do think it's, I agree that you shouldn't, that life without parole for a 14-year-old is insane. Even though I get it, that stabbing a little girl to death and strangling, something happened to that boy.
Yes.
Something very bad happened to that boy, whether it's a psychotic break, whether it was something he was terribly abused.
Well, there was an interesting conversation in Reddit in like the one little bit I was able to find where this commenter was saying, you know, when I was a kid, my dad was abusive and all you wanted to do was not get in trouble. That you didn't think about what would happen in the future if you got caught hiding, whatever it was that you were in trouble. Getting in trouble meant the whole family would be terrorized.
Yeah.
So you do whatever you can to not get in trouble that moment. And it kind of made sense in a way that was like, she's not dying from this way. She's not dying. I need to kill her at this point and get it over with because I'm going to get in trouble for having had someone over, which is, you know, maybe he was developmentally just delayed, but 14 seems too old to think that killing someone was an okay solution to that.
Yes, for sure. Also, I feel like hitting someone in the head and being afraid, and this is just theory, obviously. Mm-hmm. He would just hit her in the head a bunch more times.
Right. Why not just smack her in the head with a baseball bat?
This, the other part just gets so violent, up close, crazy, bloody. I mean, like,
yeah, almost like wanting to see what happens, you know?
Well,
like,
the pants down thing is not good.
The pants down thing is a very it's sexual no matter what.
Yeah.
So even if you didn't touch her, it's sexual.
Yes. And stabbing is sexual in that, you know, in a psychosexual way.
Yeah, totally. Strangling too. I mean, yeah.
Oh man.
I mean, and when you strangle someone, you for the most part have to look at them in the face.
Yeah.
If you can fucking do that, you got some major issues beyond you being scared you're gonna get a belt whipping from your dad.
Yeah. And also, I mean, people always say this, but I'll just say it anyway, you can hear the chorus of people who were abused by terrible parents who are like, I would never kill anybody.
Right.
So it's not A plus B. Like, I think
yeah.
that psychiatric element is absolutely has to be there.
Yeah.
Because here's the other thing, too. You're right. A mother who would immediately run across the street, like, obviously, it's insane finding a dead body under your son's bed.
Yeah.
But the she knew.
Yeah.
She knew he did it. Like, it wasn't. I don't know. She didn't go, let's let the cops tell us what happened. She
right.
went, you have to go get my son.
Her
right
first, her first thought was for the girl, the little girl, and her family who was waiting to find where she was, and not for her kid or for the dad who, you know, because if you find the body, someone in the house did it. You right. might not know it's your son.
Right.
Her first thought was that I found this, the girl.
Yeah.
She's clearly the victim, not my son.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. It's fucked up. There's yeah. another one too, but maybe I don't need to get into it.
Do it, do it.
It's just Eric Smith, this the red the like the little oh, the yeah. redhead kid.
He who, killed his parents?
No. Okay, so Eric Smith, born 1980, he murdered 4-year-old Derek Roby on August 2nd, 1993. This is in Steuben County, New York. Mm. So Eric, unlike Josh, had been diagnosed by a defense psychiatrist with intermittent explosive disorder. It's a mental disorder causing individuals to act out violently and unpredictably. He was a loner. He was tormented by bullies. His, you know, he was like a nerdy redhead. You look at him as a kid in court, especially there are these videos of him in court, and he's just this. You can tell he's troubled just by looking at him. You yeah. can tell he'd been bullied. You can tell he didn't like himself. And he basically said he took his anger out on this little kid, this sweet little Derek Roby, who was riding his bike to summer camp. And let's see, Eric was riding his bike to summer camp, and 4-year-old Derek was walking alone to the same camp. They saw each other. He lured him into the nearby woods, and then Smith, like, overkilled the shit out of him.
Ugh.
Like, so this was on purpose. Like, you know, it's such a weird thing. It's like, well, these two different things where this kid said that he had to do it because he hit her in the head and his dad was going to find out. This kid just straight up wanted to murder someone.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing this thing about in one of the many fucking true crime shows I watched that Eric took a banana out of his lunch and smashed it into the little kid's face. And later that night, the aunt or someone was babysitting him and got a banana out, and the kid freaked out. And I think that's how they figured out who it was. The kid freaked out wow. over the banana. So basically, Smith said that he'd been bullied by older children in high school, and that is by his father and sister. And he confessed that he took his rage out on Roby, but was worried that Roby would tell, so he killed him. It's very odd. It's so.
How old was he when he did it?
So this kid was, Eric was, I think he was 14 as well.
Oh, wow. I just remember looking at pictures of him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know why? Because when I was 14, doing the, those two boys that killed their dad.
Yeah.
His picture came up all the time.
Yeah.
And he looks so young. He's in a blazer.
He doesn't look 13. He looks like he could be.
He looks like he's 9.
11 or 12. Yeah, 9.
And he's got those ears that stick out.
Big old ears. And if you look at him now, too, because there's some jailhouse interviews with him now where he's just so apologetic to the family. He says, I wish I could take the kid's place. Like, he's very, very. Oh. Remorseful about it, but even now he looks like remember the redheaded guy in The Burbs who was yeah. one of the haunted mm-hmm. that lived in the house? He looks like him now. It's just like he doesn't look, which is such, I shouldn't judge someone by the way they look, but you know.
Well, I mean, that's why people get bullied, if you look different.
Yeah, definitely.
It's
So he's been apologizing through in prison. This other kid, Josh, he has since gone on to, he got a degree in being a paralegal, and he's been working as a paralegal helping other inmates with their appeals. So both of these people have gone on to try to make amends for their murder. Do they deserve to be in prison forever? And I'm not asking like they don't. I fucking don't know.
Right. It really it makes you come way off the, like, let them all fry.
Right.
Which is, I like to feel that way just because it's very comfortable and, like, a simple yeah. solution.
But it's the same reason that I still can't give anyone a definite answer about the death penalty.
Right.
I just couldn't give anyone an answer.
Right.
Because I don't fucking know. There's so many different circumstances.
I know. It's true. It's much more complex than one thing or the other. It's case by case. But I mean, yeah, it's difficult because I understand people saying like it's wrong to kill and revenge is wrong and like one wrong doesn't make a right. Two wrongs don't make a right. I agree with all of it.
But then you hear a story about a dad murdering his child's molester and you're like, yeah, good.
100%.
Yeah.
Or like you hear about repeat molesters.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Or those priests that have molested 600 Ugh. Children.
Yeah.
Kill them immediately. I mean, immediately. I honestly feel that way. I know. It's just like, what good are you? You clearly don't. This is what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And what life... You have ruined 600 lives, if not more.
But then you hear, well, he was molested when he was a kid, constantly.
And maybe if his molester had just been taken out
right.
with a single bullet to the back.
I mean, it's so complex. This is why we have this podcast, is because we could talk about this for hours and hours, which is what we're going to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's so rough. Also, that kid, and I mean, I've never had explosive anger, but I understand... like getting in, especially if you do drugs. Mm-hmm. Like when I used to be on speed, I took diet pills for a long time, mm-hmm. which yes, I lost 30 pounds in 1 month, but
30 pounds in 1 month.
Yes. I had friends who were like, are you okay?
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm the best. Talking and smoking and
right.
not breathing. But you do have that thing where there's the weirdest feeling that's so separate when you have like a rage explosion or like when you get onto that track and you can't get back off.
It's like a panic when you have a panic attack.
Exactly. It's like your brain is having a reaction separate from you. And to be a child trapped inside that, I mean.
Well, I kind of can't help but understand taking it out on someone else, because I was bullied as a kid, but I was a little, and my brother and sister were, you know, fucked with me. Not abusive, but as older siblings will do. Yeah. And I'm the youngest, so I can't take it out on anyone else. So right. I just hurt animals. No, I'm just kidding. Wouldn't that be fucking hilarious? So I just hurt my cat. No, my God. But yeah, when my mom would be a bitch, I would get so fucking pissed. It's that thing of punching a wall because there's nothing else to punch.
Yeah. Yes.
It's and this kid clearly wasn't taught self-control. If he was abused by his dad and his sister, he was taught that violence against someone smaller than you is okay.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's almost like a larger, almost like I know he didn't do this in any way consciously. It's symbolic.
Yeah.
It's him going, here's what we do.
Right.
Here's what we do. And
here's what happens
so
to me.
Yeah. It's going to go this far. The idea of a father and sister being bullying and abusive within a family, it's disgusting to me. Like, that's what a terrible, sad life that kid had.
I completely see it. You know, I think about like the things I was bullied, but I've said so many shitty things to kids, like the nerdy kids when I was younger. And I think about them all the time and what their home lives were like, and that I contributed to their fucking, their awful lives. And it disgusts me.
I mean, that's the thing too. I feel like when you're kids, you do these things because you don't have, you don't have the, a mature sense of where you belong in the world, what other people's lives are like. I remember being like, honestly, being like in fifth grade and asking my teacher, who was a friend of our family, and she would eat dinner at our house sometime. And I asked her one night, like, there's a girl in my class. And I was like, why is Sarah's face always dirty? And she was like, because she doesn't have anybody to wash it for her. And it blew my mind. Yeah. I was like, I assumed every single other kid had the exact same life I
did. Totally. Yeah. And I mean, like, in my I was loudly making fun of other kids because I was happy that I wasn't the kid at that moment getting made fun of.
Exactly right.
And because I wanted to show everyone that I was part of the group too, that I could make fun of this person too, because I was getting made fun of. And it's
100%. Not okay. We've talked about it. I do it to this day of like, the quickest way to bond with someone is to figure out who you both hate.
Oh, for sure.
And that's just human nature. That's that thing of like, yeah, you deflect. I'm not the bad one. Isn't that person the bad one?
Yeah.
I mean, it's how we do it. And it takes a lot of strength and a lot of like, it's very difficult to have like with human interaction, if you've gotten dealt a shitty hand every time, to still be like, I'm going to handle this great.
To be kind.
When you're 12.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you can't do it.
We're we're 31 and it's hard enough to.
I wish I was 31, girl.
Yeah. You are. Karen's 31, everyone.
On this podcast, yeah. I get to be 31.
Yeah. It could be whatever.
Awesome. I love it.
Drink. Drink shots. what was I going to say? I don't remember. Let's not have kids ever.
They're
terrible people.
That's the other thing is like that. I remember saying so the last time I was home, I said something bitchy to my niece, who I adore and we get along great. Mm-hmm. But she was just doing something kind of jerky. And then I was like, just go do it or whatever I said. And then she's like, all right. And instead of like having a sensitive reaction,
yeah.
She's learned because she also is the daughter of she's an only child.
Yeah.
My sister is a single mother.
Yeah.
And so she's kind of learned to roll with punches for a 9-year-old so much better, where I was like, oh man, because I felt guilty the second it came out of my mouth.
Yeah.
And I was like, if I had like a favorite aunt that like bitched at me, like sniped at me, it would have hurt my feelings. But she was kind of like, whatever, dude, and walked away.
She's like more of an adult because she's a single, her mother's a single mother and she doesn't have siblings. So she acts, your sister probably treats her more like an adult than a kid.
I think she's that, and she's very close with her two cousins who are like 2 and 4 years older than her. Oh, so she's like, she's kind of like toughened up a little bit. But that's the other thing is when everybody gets picked on in some way, you learn that picking on people is a good way to up your own status.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's no other, when you're young like that, there aren't options unless you go to some amazing progressive school that teaches you about stuff like that, which it doesn't work. It's like,
no,
somebody's going to get thrown in that garbage can. And the way to make it not you is to make sure you're
but then you go home at night and your parents are abusive too. Like, Vince always gets sad when he sees kids because he remembers how you just feel like that this is going to go on forever.
Yeah.
You're never going to have control over your life. You're never going to, you know, be able to make decisions on your own. It feels fucking infinite.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and like school politics also it feels like, oh, this is my world. This bully is always going to be in my life.
Yeah.
This girl's always going to be prettier than me.
Totally.
It's all that kind of stuff.
Oh,
that
totally.
It's just the way a teen brain works.
And it turns out that pre-teen. We ended up being the coolest ones out there. Who'd have thunk?
Here's how you be the coolest ones.
Yeah.
For a really long time, you're so not the coolest
one. Yeah.
You're severely not the coolest one.
The least coolest one usually becomes either a murderer or the coolest one.
Yes.
Pick one.
That's right. It's your choice. It is a choice.
It is a choice.
It's a path you go down.
That's what this whole thing comes back around to is it is a choice. And these two boys chose to kill someone. And
in the moment. But
I know.
Here's this, like, I'm just going to play a devil's advocate psychiatrist. Yeah. That's like, if you have explosive disorder, you do not have a choice.
Yeah.
It's like that thing where when I get nervous and my mouth starts talking, then I'm like, oh no, I'm talking.
It's not a choice.
What am I saying?
And we have so many outlets now, psychiatry and psychology and intense therapy to help control it. But would you feel comfortable if that person was out in society now?
Probably not. Like, not in my town.
Yeah. So
I would just be, it's that thing where like, you know, as a parent, you'd just be so paranoid.
Totally. Totally. All right. Well, that's my favorite murder. Can I pick next week's favorite topic? I mean,
yeah. Message received, Georgia.
That was all your fault, Karen, that I got so dark and deep. So let's. Do you want to read a hometown murder?
I pick next week.
So can I? It's like butterflies, kittens, something nice.
Butterfly murders. Oh, the butterfly murders of the Philippines. Yes, we absolutely can do that one.
Do you want to read us? Let's see. Why don't we do this? So you want to read a favorite hometown murder that we got emailed? You can email us at myfavoritemurder@gmail.com. Your hometown murder. We'll read one every fucking week, even though we get so many. It's incredible. I love you guys. And then maybe let's do a quick separate episode of other people's on the Facebook page. I said, what's your hidden in plain sight murder?
Oh yeah.
And I can read a few of those and maybe we can read one or two hometown murders. So we'll have a mini episode that'll come out maybe a couple days after the regular one comes out.
Great.
Is that cool?
I love it.
Okay. So why don't you read me a hometown murder, please?
Okay, cool. This is also another, now I'm getting obsessed with follow-up.
Oh.
Like, I'm getting obsessed with like thoroughness and research, and but I really do genuinely love it. So this is a bit of a follow-up, but there's much more to it.
Okay.
And it's from Lily K, we'll say.
Yes.
Hi, Karen in Georgia. Can't believe how much you sound like my friend Julie and I when we're together and really get going. I've been obsessed with true crime for so long that I became a forensic psychologist.
You are a fucking badass, Lily.
Why not do what you love? There's nothing else in the entire world I'd rather do. And yes, you can intern for me sometime.
Yes.
Way to go. I make my husband watch all the true crime shows. And now when he gets sick, he's convinced I'm poisoned him. Like those deadly women of centuries past.
I love it.
Anyway, I just found your podcast and your call for Hometown Crime. Then I saw you did mine in your second episode. Bummer, but I decided not to listen to it yet and pretend you didn't do it so I can tell you about it.
Love it.
Paul Bernardo was mine. And like I mentioned, it affected me so much that I became a forensic psychologist.
Wow.
When I was in high school in Toronto, the Scarborough suburb of Toronto, rapes were going on. It was terrifying. The bus company started letting women out at any point along the route at night, not just at stops, so we wouldn't have to walk far from the stop to home.
Oh, wow.
Our regular gym classes were canceled, and we got a specialist in to teach us self-defense.
Holy shit.
Also, there was a guy at my high school who looked more like the sketch of the Scarborough rapist than Paul ever did. And he said he was thinking of changing his hair when the sketch came out, but he was afraid that would actually make him look more guilty.
Yeah, it would.
And then she put in parentheses, it wasn't him, by the way. Okay, so just as the rapes started slowing down, we heard about two girls go missing on the other side of Toronto. Did you know Leslie Mahaffey was actually locked out of her house the night that she met Paul Bernardo? Horrible. She was a rebellious teen, and her mom picked that night to do some tough love on her when she broke curfew and locked her out.
Oh my
and
God.
Her mom locked her out.
Can I just say my mom, tough love was a thing,
yes.
And my mom fucking did it, and it was the worst.
In the 80s.
Yeah, kids, parents, please don't do tough love on your kids. It doesn't work.
Yeah, that's right. Oh,
anyways, sorry. Go on.
No, that's okay. It's
oh my God. So she locked her kid out.
Her own mother locked her out of the house.
How much does that woman hate herself now?
Oh, I can't imagine. I mean, that is if she's even still alive.
No,
that is
for sure.
Talk about the worst thing in the world.
Totally.
A child dying and then you. Oh my God, that's a nightmare. Sorry. And then Kristen French was also portrayed as the good girl and Leslie as the more rebellious. And Tammy, Carla's sister, was basically forgotten. I know every single detail about this case, but in case you don't want to hear it, I'll get to some good anecdotes. This was going on throughout my entire high school life, the rapes, the murders. Then my last year of high school, they found out it was Paul and Carla. So, of course, I went to the trial. I actually had this college boyfriend I wasn't that into, and I made him go with me. Poor guy, he was really upset about being there, but I loved it. Paul... it says Paul was so incredibly in court. I wonder what she meant.
Mm-hmm.
When they took his handcuffs off, he wouldn't just turn his wrists to have them removed. He would turn his entire body. It was as if he was trying to look every person in the gallery in the eye. It was creepy. And then in college, a girl in my dorm started dating a guy named Sam who looked like Paul. So whenever I had a couple drinks in me, I'd call him Paul.
I love this chick.
I also wrote all my psych papers in college on Paul Bernardo or Carla, abnormal psych class, personality class. I wanted to know what made them tick. And then
terrifying.
She was the second one, but it's super long.
Yeah. What a terrifying fucking thing to go through high school.
I mean,
with.
It took up their whole world. I mean, that was,
yeah.
was crazy.
And then to find out that a woman is involved, I don't know why, like that's a different level because you would see a couple and you'd think I'm safe.
It's the ultimate
lure. We've talked
lure.
About that. Yeah. Episode 2, was it?
I think so. But that's the reason I love that she gave all those details, because
yeah.
that was the one where I was a little fuzzy on my details in that
well,
one.
Well,
it's
so shit that
really
you, it's shit you wouldn't know about. It's the same thing about watching The Simpsons, is that it's information that, you know, you watched the whole trial, but you could not have known what it was like to be on the jury or
yes.
what it was like in Marcia Clark's office when her boss was pissed about the glove and that it was their idea to have him try the glove on.
Yeah. Ugh, amazing.
It's just details.
And also that, like, being... I love that she loved it so much she went to trials.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I can't tell you how... Like, I've been asking people their hometown murders for years when I'm at parties and drinking too much and calling people by murderers' names. And this is, like, just feeding... This is feeding me on a level that I can't even handle.
But you can really put away that voice in your head that says you're weird in any way.
Yeah.
It's just simply not weird.
Because we have an inbox full of hometown murders to I hope we haven't gotten any. Yeah. It's incredible.
Any what? Sorry.
I don't know. Like, I wouldn't, like you said, someone asked us to be on their podcast in our Gmail, and I wouldn't see it because it's just buried underneath.
That is, there's at least one person, but I think there might be more than one
person. We need to give them a different email address.
Yeah.
I love it. I did. So I wrote a thing on Facebook real quick about, and I said that like a cocktail trivia, like information that I love. So mine was that that everyone knows that all serial killers don't have three names, as everyone thinks they do, like John Wayne Gacy. It's that John, they use their middle names so that normal people named John Gacy don't, yeah, people don't think that they're the, you know, they don't look them up in the fucking Yellow Pages and say, John Gacy, is that you? No,
and
it's John.
Kill them at their house.
Wayne Gacy, right? So yeah. I asked people their like cocktail trivia murder facts, and this person, can I read a couple?
Please.
That DNA was, the DNA evidence was first used to convict a killer in England in the 80s. The killer was named Colin Pitchfork, and he had killed two girls.
Wow.
Which is amazing. That serial killers are apparently obsessive masturbators since they can't attain normal sexual relationships.
Aww.
Most women who kill when using a weapon will use a knife because it's more personal.
Yep.
Many killers start out as peeping Toms. Let's see.
That is really creepy. Because peeping Toms culturally have always been treated very lightly, like, oh, this kook up in the tree.
Yeah. It's, oh, he wants to look at cute girls. Yeah. No.
It's like the, you know, Animal House. I've got my binoculars and I'm looking into this.
Right. That's murdery. Like
you're on your path to murder.
Totally. One more. Eileen Wuornos' last words were, yes, I would just like to say I'm sailing with the rock and I'll be back, like Independence Day with Jesus. June 6th, like the movie, big mothership and all. I'll be back. I'll be back.
She was fucking crazy.
And someone replied and said, which is weird because that was also my wedding vows. This is why I love the fucking Facebook group so
best.
Much.
Oh my God.
Okay. So everyone's...
I'll be sailing with The Rock. Did she mean The Wrestler?
I think so. No, the movie The Rock.
Oh.
I think.
Fuck.
I didn't know about that.
Eileen,
honey.
Girl.
Sweetheart.
Girl.
Angel. You can, so we're at MyFaveMurder on Twitter.
Yes.
And you can email us at MyFavoriteMurder@gmail.com and please follow, go to our group on Facebook, My Favorite Murder. It's private, so you can just like talk all the shit you want.
But also those things people are making. Did you see the girl on Twitter that was making fake books?
No.
Wait, you know, I'll
if I'll tell you what. Okay, real quick. Someone on the Facebook group made a murder bingo.
I saw that.
Yeah. And someone else made this beautiful a quote that I said, I think, last week. It said, I don't want any survivors. And it's like in the background of beautiful flowers and stuff.
I saw that. It's so good.
I want them to keep doing that. And of course,
it looks like an inspirational quote, but it's you saying, I don't want to see any survivors.
Yeah. And then, of course, the drinking game, which is like everyone just keeps adding, like, when they say this, when they do that, when they say this. Ugh. It's like the best.
I mean, that feeds right into my humongous, deep ego need.
No, totally. People are listening to us.
It's a girl on Twitter named Thin Izzy,
mm-hmm.
and she's doing these fake, she keeps writing, read my new book, and this is Don't Burp, the Robert Durst story. It's just stuff we've said about people, and she's making it into a book.
I love her.
Or maybe, I think it's things we've said. He definitely killed like 8 people. I was a teenage Robert Durst, and it's like Robert Durst when he was like in his early 20s, and it just, they look like book covers.
What a gem.
Well done, Thin Izzy. Oh, I love this one.
Which
the Staircase
one?
Part 2.
Oh my God, it's just an owl.
And then it's, he was gay in the South is one quote, and a microscopic owl feathers on the other side.
Oh my God, and it's like a beautiful photo of an owl.
Yeah,
that's incredible. People are the best.
It's very exciting.
I think this is what we're doing here is just trying to make everyone know that there are a lot of murders, but there are a lot more funny people.
And here's the other thing, I remember when everybody started going batshit crazy about, I know I've already talked shit about this on this podcast, but Sex in the City in the whenever it was, late 90s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And I was like, has the world gone insane? Who gives one fuck about that stupid show? But yeah. It was like, I'm a Miranda, right? And I'm going to drink a Cosmopolitan or whatever. And I was just sitting there like, I guess I'm just a total weirdo and yep. a total outsider nope. and totally alone.
You'll never connect with people on a normal level because they like shit like Sex in the City.
Yes. And just, and so things like this, it just, my heart yeah. grows 10 sizes every time I hear anything about it. Because it's like, we have our people. We yeah. just didn't know they were out there.
Well, the most fun is that we're the most popular ones out of the entire group of people because we're the host of this podcast.
What? Oh, you mean of everybody?
Yeah.
Because like, that's, we started it.
Going back to feeding our ego. And it's nice that we're the bot, like we're the heads. So.
I have to say.
Yeah.
So over one quick conversation where you were like, we should do a podcast. And yeah. I was like, okay. And then here's why I love Georgia Hardstark. Because then she actually does it.
Whereas, I wish like, yeah.
I would have, it would take me 4 years to actually really make a plan or be like, no, let's actually do it.
I'd love to go to little tiny Georgia and say, someday you're going to talk about murder and people are going to listen to you. She would have been like, yes, that's fucking awesome. Georgia, stop cursing. You're just a tiny little thing. Yay.
Yay.
Find us on places and thanks for listening.
We love you. Stay sexy.
Yeah.